I will call to order the November 3rd meeting of the Sussex County Council. First agenda item is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, do you have any changes?
Yes, one change on the executive session item. We do not need to meet for that item. Executive session, land acquisition, and possible action on executive session is not necessary.
So the last two items on the agenda, the executive session and the actions, are not necessary. Are there any other changes? Not, I'll accept the motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion and a second to approve the agenda as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Approval of minutes. In your packet this week were the October 27th minutes. Any additions, corrections, or changes? If not, I'll consider the minutes approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore?
There is none, Mr. President.
Does council have any correspondence they'd like to share? If not...
I did get something. Let's see here. From the Homeless Walkathon, I got a thank you for supporting that. And from Tamia Bonneville.
Okay.
So she thanked us for it.
Very good. Any other correspondence? If not, we'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Baker for his county administrator's report.
First item we have is discussion and possible introduction of an ordinance, a proposed ordinance, to adopt Chapter 60, Dog Control. And this proposed ordinance includes fees, which are suggested for your consideration by county staff. The proposed fees for dog controls could be changed today or any time prior to introduction of the ordinance, or they could be reduced after a public hearing occurs. But to increase any of the proposed fees in the ordinance after it's introduced would require another public hearing to do so. A large part of this ordinance reflects the restatement of state law regarding various requirements imposed by the state of Delaware regarding dog control. And to my knowledge, there are no further extra requirements included in the ordinance that are not already in state law, except for fee changes. The advantage of providing this information in the county ordinance is that it's easier for our staff to find the various regulations that they will be responsible for administering. And just to go over the ordinance as proposed, there on page 2, we'll start, there's a section 60-2, which does outline the various fees for dog and kennel licenses, and we'll talk about that a little bit later from the spreadsheet, but that's where they are in the ordinance. On the next page, there's a section about dog license. It says the owner of any dog 6 months of age or older, on or before March 1st, shall apply to the county. That, again, is as per current law. Individual dog licenses shall be valid for 1 year through December 31st, one calendar year. That is a little bit different than what the state does now. The state currently allows individuals to apply for 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year licenses. We felt administratively, if we start out with 1 year, we could get our feet on the ground before we go to 2 or 3 year licenses. That's something we could.
Sure. Tell me why that would. If you're going to go to the trouble to, issue a license, why would it be like 1 year? I mean, one year or 3 years, it seems like it's the same effort and we're getting the same feet on the ground if we do it.
Mr. Parker,
I'm just curious why we, if anybody.
Mr. Parker, you might want to come up. I got a feeling there'll be more questions.
The state of Delaware, when we met with representatives from DENREC, they highly suggested we go with 1 year. And would you remember some of their reasons, Eddie?
Well, administratively, it's much easier to keep track of a license. It's also easier for the dog owner if they know each year they have to renew their license rather than try to keep in mind whether they have a 3 year license for a dog or a 2 year license. But they strongly suggested to us that when we get into this that we keep it at a 1 year license because they have had nothing but headaches with the multiple year.
I guess I think about motor vehicle and how convenient it has been to get multiple year registration.
Well, the other thing, Vance, I think I ran into this one time with a dog. You have to get them at the beginning of the year. They go from the licenses like January to December. It's not like, so if in the September you get a dog and you want to get it licensed, you have to wait till the next, you know, till the January or something. Or do they issue them like a vehicle? Like Vance is saying, you can get them for every month.
We don't prorate it. It's a fee for a year, regardless of what time of that year you take out that license.
Well, they didn't issue. They wouldn't give me one. They said because it was like September or something. I forget. I mean, it seemed odd to me. I walked out of there like shaking my head.
Well, no license.
No license. Because they said you wait till January.
Right.
Which was 3 or 4 months away.
Well, if a dog is just turned 6 months old, then it's
required to be licensed. Well, this was an older dog. I shot the dog, so it didn't matter.
Couldn't get a license.
Couldn't get a license. No, I'm just joking for all you PETA people in that background.
PETA is not.
It was odd though. I mean, but so we're not going to be able to say if somebody gets a dog in September, be able to get a license that'll go from this September to the next September. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, our license are going to run January to December. Now, to be practical about it, if someone gets a dog in September or October, and they wait until January to get the license, we're not going to put them in jail.
I mean, will they get a phone?
No.
Why?
Well, how do you know if I just was lying?
Well, first of all, we have to know the age of the dog. We have to locate the dog and be made aware that it's over 6 months old and it doesn't have a license. I mean, we've got to go into this thing with some common sense. And
what would be the difficulty of issuing licenses from
September?
Any month of the year to go out a year?
Oh, we can do it any way you prescribe. We'll do it. It's just much simpler with us getting into this for the first time to try to get our feet on the ground by issuing these all
at
one particular time. That's not to say that next year we come back, we might be willing and able then to offer a multi-year license.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of reminder that gets sent out to the caller? Once they've gotten a license, do they?
There is not at this time, but mm-hmm. that's something we could consider. We certainly could send a postcard or something reminding people
of that. Well, I think what they've done at Motor V and that they've stopped the writing of the letter, and now it's just an email or a phone call or something like that. It's probably an automated phone call.
We'd always put that in the tax saying, don't forget to pay your dog's license.
That's a very good point.
We could do that. That's a good thing.
Sam, that's the smartest thing you've said to hope
very
since
good.
You got. That's good.
Yeah, Ben, listen,
that's a great idea.
Very good.
That's right.
Can these licenses be applied for online?
Yes. Yes. We have that ability. We're going to provide the application to a number of retailers throughout the county who currently sell licenses for the state. And they can simply fill out the application and mail it in with a check, and we will mail the tag back to them.
But they have to send also verification of their dogs?
They have to sign a statement that verifies
shots.
That the dog shots are up to date. That's what the state currently requires.
But with regards to filing online, I meant if I'm at home, can I go to our website and apply? And on there, I would have to check a box saying that my dog's got the proper shots.
That's correct.
Hit send. It has all my address information, and you would send me the license in the mail.
That's correct.
That's convenient.
Mr. Parker.
Yes.
Couldn't you just put, you run this list of names down, and you got them stored on your computers anyway, probably. I mean, how much trouble is it to say it's 010 or 011 or whatever, if they want to buy 3 years? Of course, some people may not. I mean, I don't understand why it's an expiration date is a real problem here.
Well,
it's already written down and named everything.
Right. As I say, we can do it for 3 years at a time. It was just in our meetings with representatives from the state, they strongly suggested that we consider an annual license because of the accounting nightmare of trying to keep track of people who have multiple dogs of different ages, that they may have taken out licenses for different years. And
this will all be computerized.
Yes.
I mean, there's going to be a software package, I assume, that we build.
It's being created in-house.
It's being created.
Yes.
Maybe we could amend this proposed agenda. I know Mr. Vanderslice is here, who worked on this, and to allow us to sell multi-year licenses, and then we can report back to you in terms of get back with our information systems people to see if that we can make that change.
I mean, it does sound like there is a consensus among the council for you to at least look at it.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr.
Just one issue. Obviously, we're dealing with an animal, and someone buys a multi-year license and the animal passes away before the multi-years. Are people then going to want refunds?
No.
You'd have to bring in a
death certificate.
I mean, if you wreck your car, does DMV give you a refund on your registration?
No. So we can get some extra money that way instead of going the other way.
Mr. Baker, you want to continue? I'm sorry.
Yes.
We're just trying to stretch out the time.
The next item is retail dog outlet licenses. Owner of retail dog outlets, and it's our understanding there's only three or four in Sussex County, would also be required to be licensed as they are now. Again, that we had then that license for 1 year, and then kennel licenses also for where there are more than four dogs kept for show, sale, breeding, etc. may apply, and they also are for one calendar year. And I don't think the state issues those for more than 1 year now. Do you know?
No, I don't believe they did. I think they schedule in the state law, isn't
it? Is there any reason why, maybe I'm missing it, veterinarians couldn't sell licenses?
Well, the only, our thoughts were that, yes, they could eventually, and some do now, but we felt that if we provide, that we have some control issues, because when you set it up with a veterinarian, there's paperwork and whatnot that they have to send in to the county and maintaining the money, and there's been some issues with that in the past, apparently. And we just felt like at this point in time, if we go with mail, the county building, the website for the licenses, that we thought we could get started. We also would provide vets and various retail sales businesses an application form that they can keep there and provide to the public, so that they could just take that form and mail in a check with the form and get the license.
All right.
That's how we thought we would start it.
Libraries, can we put them in our library?
Yes.
Another good reason to have libraries.
Sound like we've gone through the dogs anyhow.
The next page, section D, the applicant shall be entitled to receive a license, again, provided proof of currently valid rabies vaccination, which is the current requirement. Each issued license will be accompanied by a metal tag, which we will supply, similar to the metal tags that the state currently issues. Section E notes that there are fines for not obtaining a dog license, and it's my understanding these are the same fines that are currently charged, $50, and then for subsequent offenses within 12 months, person shall be fined $100. And then in section G on the next page, the license fee set by the county should not be required to be paid when the dog is one which qualifies as a CNI guide dog, and or even a law enforcement dog. And that, as I understand, that's in a separate section of the code, the law enforcement part. And then beneath that, dog control agents are hereby authorized to inspect the facilities for which a kennel or retail dog outlet license is sought or obtained. And again, currently that is done once per year by the, right now, by Kent County SPCA. If you go to the next page, and again, if the inspection of those premises of the kennel or dog license did not satisfy the requirements for humane handling, then there are certain, there's a warning that first that's issued, and within 10 to 60 days, if the problem is not taken care of, Then there are some fines and whatnot according to Delaware code that would be implemented. The next section, specifications for the humane handling, care, and treatment of dogs are all as per state code. Again, this is a recital of what is in the state code, the various rules and whatnot regarding indoor housing facilities, outdoor housing facilities, primary enclosures, animal health, and so on. And then on the next to the last page, 60-5, licensing agents, the county may authorize as many qualified persons or companies as licensing agents as it deems necessary. And then we could determine bond requirements. So eventually we could set up a process where veterinarians or SPCA agencies or businesses can sell dog licenses, but we anticipate right now we'd like to try use the website, mail, and then county admin building as the locations to purchase dog licenses. We also felt we could sell these right at the building permit counter. Reciprocity of dog license. If you have, you should have a dog license for the county where the primary residence, the owner is. If the dog is licensed in another county in Delaware, then they are not required to have a license here. And then finally, at the end of it, the county shall have the authority to charge administrative fees to administer the provision in this chapter based on approval by the Sussex County Council. What we had in mind is as we get into this, we were thinking that if we came up with a fee for like a vanity type low digit dog tag, if there was interest in that, or an administrative fee, say to deliver stray dogs to owners versus taking them to a kennel and whatnot, that maybe we could just, as we go, bring this back to the county council, of course, for council approval, but not have to go through a long public hearing process to establish those fees as we learn by doing. And then the last page shows the various fees that are currently charged by the state of Delaware and then what is proposed in this ordinance. And as you can see, the state for spayed and neutered dogs, the state currently charges $3. For unordered dogs, $6. We are proposing the maximum at this time. Again, that could be lowered now or at the time of the public hearing of 10 and 15. Those were the maximums that we would be allowed. For kennel licenses, again, there's various fees that the state now charges for 12, 25, 50, 51 or more dogs and so on. And as you can see, they're listed there by what is proposed and what the current fee is. And then next to the last page shows the revenue. Again, based on the numbers that we received as to the current number of dogs and licenses that are issued in Sussex County, the state collects about $23,000 from these license fees a year, and yet we have a cost of about $600,000 for the program. Even with the proposed increased fees, we would collect about $68,000. Now, that assumes that we will not license any more dogs than are currently licensed. We anticipate licensing more than what is currently licensed.
I have received some comments preliminarily from some kennel owners who seem to have issue with certain provisions of the proposed ordinance. Is this a time-sensitive introduction, or could we let this rest a week?
We can let it rest a week, because I think the first meeting in December would be the first time that the public hearing could occur, whether it's introduced this week or next week, I believe. Is that correct, Robin?
Probably since we don't meet the week of Thanksgiving. Right?
Yeah. So we can put it on for discussion next week and review it and take into account these comments.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That last page, that chart there. I don't know if I'm reading this right, but it says 51 or more dogs is $200. no more than 50 dogs a 1,000. Seems like the lesser dogs you got, I mean, the more dogs you get, the cheaper it goes.
That's a projection based on 8 kennels that have no more than 50 dogs at $200 each, or excuse me. There's currently 5 kennels that have no more than 50 dogs, so they're multiplying the 200 by 5.
No more than 12 dogs.
Question that the people have to contact you. They have about what is now currently the state law. It's already the law.
They may be. They were vague. So is it possible to put this on our website for the public to view?
Yes.
Under the notation that it's just a for discussion.
Sure.
Yeah. Possible introduction.
Okay.
And Mr. President, one thing I'd like to point out too, if there is a prosecution for example, there was some on the kennels, if the state attorney general would decide to prosecute, any fines and fees as a result of that do not come to the county. They would go to the state. That's something that the council may want to look at in the future as part of their lobbying with the state to see if part of that monies could come here. Because the state police would actually go with our enforcement officers to enforce this, then it would be the state prosecuting the state of Delaware, not Sussex County. So we may want to look at that in the future for part of the lobbying efforts.
But I guess the question would beg, will the fine cover our cost of prosecution?
We might be better off not going.
We wouldn't have the legal.
Right.
Yeah.
I can understand your interest, but... all right. Is there anything else before we allow this to rest for a week?
How about if a person owns 10 dogs or 12 dogs and they're not for sale? He just has them.
And he has to have a license for each dog.
Is that required to have a kennel license at that?
It's not required, as I understand.
Only if you're a commercial.
It is an option.
If you're you got to be advertising yourself as a commercial kennel, right? I mean,
no,
just because
I think
you number
could have 10 or 12 hunting dogs if you wanted and apply.
But you don't become a kennel. Or do you fall into a category of becoming a kennel because you're a hunter with 15
I understand
eagles?
That you do. As I understand
is that right?
That you can. The kennel license, in that case, on that third page. Any person that maintains a kennel wherein more than 4 dogs are kept for show, trial, sale, breeding, or other purposes may apply.
Right.
It's cheaper. That would cover your license fee for all the 12 dogs.
So,
you don't have to have a license if you've got a kennel.
Instead of spending, if you had 12 dogs, $120 to have them.
But then he's going to fall into the inspection. He'll fall into getting inspected and other things like that, right? Once you become,
you have to be inspected once a year.
Right, you'll be coming. So there is a downside to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I got a person that called me. He's got, I think, 9 dogs in his house.
In his house?
Yeah. They're poodles or whatever else, small dogs. And like Robin. That's what I was saying. But anyway, the dogs are in his house, and I think somebody's after him to try and get kennel license. And I think it's an option.
As I understand it.
There's a lot of hobbyists that will breed, you know, a couple dogs in their homes.
He said they're all pets, and they're like just part of the family. So, you know.
What?
He said they're like part of the family. You know, I don't have any dogs in my house, but some people does. And
I don't have any dogs in my family.
There may be a separate issue also as far as a zoning issue with the number of dogs that someone has, and Mr. Lang could speak to that better than I.
I just think that if there is something that seems kind of complicated, it might deter people from doing it. Better study it, and it's easy for people to not license a dog.
I have a feeling we'll get an earful this week if we post it. The reporting of this, a lot of people are going to be affected, and it's a major money loss for the county. I mean, this is a $500,000 hole we're digging, but what can you do? Anything else from council before we move on through the agenda?
So, Eddie, we're going to have this posted on our website, this ordinance, so people can look at it.
We'll have it on there tomorrow. It'll be on.
Okay.
Or the draft or something.
Thank you,
okay,
Mr.
Great. Thanks, Ed.
This is.
Exactly.
Anybody send us?
It's the same thing that we got.
Same thing as in, it's in the packet, right?
Yes, the original packet, we were missing a few pages that didn't run through the copier, so this one has, is a complete copy, and I just made it through.
Send me one back, I thought we had a packet. Who missed a copy on this?
Because maybe it is different, huh?
We don't snitch, yeah, we do not snitch.
Susie Dollar Bill.
I think it's the other Sue.
You should write, I stand corrected.
Okay, the first item, the next item we have on the agenda, discussion regarding the small accessory building ordinance, and then also manufactured housing land use issues is also included for discussion. To give you a little background and history regarding this proposed ordinance, on September 16, 2008, the County Council discussed two options, and in your letter there's a page that looks like this, which was a handout then that was used then. Basically, the council considered the possibility of an ordinance which would not require a variance for replacement of small accessory buildings if they're on the same footprint and the same size as the original building. Or the other discussion was that when discussing the concerns regarding cost is the possibility of just reducing the fee required for a variance for replacement of small accessory buildings. The council at that time elected to take the route of an amendment to the code with an ordinance change, which is item number one, which is why we're where we're at with the ordinance. And so on October 21st, 2008, an ordinance was introduced, and you also have a copy of that here, which I'm sure you remember, but basically it says that accessory buildings containing 120 square feet or less may be replaced without requiring an application for granting a variance if the replacement building is the same or lesser size and is to be located substantially within the same footprint as the building it replaces, and that the owner or applicant applies for and obtains a building permit before it is installed, and that the accessory building being replaced was legally there, was allowed by grandfathering, or installed with a valid building permit. So that was introduced in October, and then on January 8th, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing and recommended ordinance approval. On January 27th of 2009, the County Council held a public hearing, and there was considerable discussion at that hearing, and the council deferred and left the record open for input and comments from an ad hoc committee with representatives from the county staff as well as DeMoe. Since then, the committee has met several times. However, there's no firm conclusions that have been determined. So that is pretty much the history and the background regarding that ordinance.
I have a question.
Ms. Deaver.
In the ordinance itself, there's a phrase that says whether if provided there was a permit for the shed or that it was allowed by grandfathering, what does that constitute? How would you know, what do you mean? What does that mean? I'm not sure. I mean, I know what grandfathering is, but in this instance, what does that mean?
Okay, I might ask Mr. Lank if he could answer that.
Who gives that?
Yeah.
Bad word. Actually.
This is the grandfather.
Grandfather. If it's established to be a non-conforming use where it pre-existed zoning, basically, what we would refer to as not really grandfathering. Similar, but not that wording. Non-conforming.
So, if it's
existed
non-conforming,
prior to zoning,
mm-hmm, but it has a permit, it had a permit originally.
It may not have had a permit originally.
Okay.
That would be the point.
Right.
Say prior to zoning, that is 1974?
Mm-hmm. Well, zoning actually started on October 15th, 1968. Under an interim ordinance, lasted about 2.25 years, regulations were like two pieces of newspaper. They're real small. We really don't try to reference that because we got to the comprehensive zoning ordinance in 71, January 1st. So we try to use that date as
our
basis.
So something that was built or put up before that time is a grandfathered thing?
Could have been.
Or
it's non-conforming.
Or it's non-conforming.
Is a better word.
Because the regulation changed.
Mm-hmm.
And regulations change each time, that creates a non-conforming situation.
Right. But who grandfathers and allows it to be grandfathered? And is that
the word grandfathering is non-conforming by our regulations.
Okay. So it's not something, because it says either it either had a permit or it's grandfathered.
Right.
So if it didn't
either
have
a permit
then you can. So if you didn't have a permit,
if it had a permit, it could be basically the ordinance intent was if it had a permit, it could be replaced.
Say that again, please.
If it had a permit, it could be replaced.
Okay, and if it didn't?
With another permit.
Uh-huh. And if it didn't have an original permit under this proposed ordinance, could it be replaced?
If it was established that yes, it was nonconforming prior to regulation.
And the administration can do that?
We have.
Okay. It was established.
It's hard to prove because the only record that we have is we go to the assessment record. And the assessment record will tell us what's on the property. It'll tell us the approximate date mm-hmm. that the dwelling was on the property. It doesn't typically give a date as to when the accessory structures were placed on
mm-hmm.
the property. That's
mm-hmm.
it gets a little bit confusing because there's no date.
Okay, so we're dealing with very old records.
And then you got to find a permit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Mr. Cole, I know you had some strong opinions on this.
Well, no, I'm just hoping that we can get something move forward. The issues of the fees that are attached to this have been deemed by many to be excessive, put a burden on people. So, could you run down right now what do we do right now? If I want to put a shed, I have to get a permit from the county.
You get a permit.
And that costs how much?
It depends. It could be as little as $7.50.
$7.50?
$7.50.
$7.50. Okay.
Could be.
Okay.
Up to about
the typical average. It depends on the value of the improvement.
Huh?
It depends on the value of the improvement.
So,
and that was the
say $2,500 shed.
Based on a chart to in the possession of the Board of Assessment.
Okay, so
I don't have the access.
All right, $7.50 plus.
I just say that's the minimum used to be. Anyway.
All right, so that's the first thing they would need, a building permit.
Right.
Next thing would be?
The real question is if they need a variance.
Well, that's okay. Mm-hmm. So if they don't need a variance, they just have to come in and get a building permit.
Get a permit.
Okay. Now then, the person who needs a variance.
Right. That's $400.
Okay. So there's $400 there, and then they got to get a building permit also, right?
If they get the variance.
Right. Okay.
Then they have the permit fee.
And then
to get the variance, do they need a survey?
In the parks, the policy has been through administrative action that we require a survey.
Which could be another $400.
Could be more.
Yeah.
I surprisingly saw a list of what the fees cost in one of the parks, and I was surprised at what the costs were.
Okay, so that's
there
another.
A couple of them were substantially more than $400.
Were they?
About how much?
Well, one of them was over $800.
$800.
$400 to $800.
It's because they had to establish the corners of the lot and then establish all the improvements on the lot.
Right.
Okay.
That's where you get into the cost when they do the improvements.
All right. Now then, my understanding over the years, you've required the parks now to submit surveys from these parks. Haven't we done that?
We're still working on trying to get the parks to do
mm-hmm.
surveys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all parks have not.
No.
What kind of leverage do we have to get them to do it?
Well, what we've done in the past on some has been a moratorium, not allow any permits.
Till they have it.
Till they got us what we needed, right?
Okay, so if a park, how many parks approximately are in the county?
There's over 100.
Over 100. So out of the 100 plus, how many do you think have got surveys? What kind of percentage have we got? Would you guess? Just guess.
The really small parks in the 50s, a lot don't have any surveys.
Right. So, I mean, out of the 100, what do you think?
The others, the ones that have been applied for through conditional use have surveys. Some of the parks, I mean, UC Air, for example, we have a survey on that, but we didn't originally have a survey.
Right.
It was a full schematic drawing, basically, originally.
Mm-hmm.
probably over 50% have surveys.
Okay.
But they're not necessarily monumented. That's one complaint we've had. They're not monumented.
Mm-hmm. Are they staked with anything? Nothing?
They have been at times, but those stakes were going to be moved.
Right.
As an individual needed a permit for an improvement, the stakes got...
Yeah, what
around.
I was...
So the neighbors
got resurveyed.
What I'm trying to find out is where we could maybe change some of the fees and different requirements. And if a park has supposedly a survey that you all have accepted, acceptable survey, that we could waive maybe the survey fee, because shouldn't we be able to find, and our inspectors go out there with a tape measure and some lines, a couple guys, couldn't they establish, you know, where these corners are and things?
They have. They've made attempts in some of the parks to try to establish where the boundary. A lot of the parks bury the markers.
Right.
Because you can't cut the grass with the markers sticking up in the air. So they do bury them. And they go out with metal detectors and find them. I actually sent two of my inspectors out into a site that wasn't really an area that was in question. And they went in and found with a metal detector that the monuments were there, and they were pretty accurate.
Let's just have metal detectors
in all the vehicles to establish where the corners are.
Okay, let me throw this then on the table. Is it possible, how would you feel about, or would it work, if we waived a survey when a park had an acceptable survey of their own?
With monuments.
Well, with the way that we could find, in other words, with the corners that can be determined.
That could be done.
Okay, so...
With appropriate markers.
Okay, so you wouldn't see any problem if we waive surveys in those circumstances?
As long as we have a survey of the park with monumentation, then we could go in and do the inspections.
Okay, and how many parks do you think would have that? All the later ones, the ones that are fairly recent, right?
Well, the monumentation is the issue.
Right.
They're not, every lot's not marked.
Right.
You have to establish which ones have all their monuments in place.
Well, when they rent to somebody, aren't they able to say, here's your lot?
They do, and they've done it without survey.
Oh.
Or they've done it with the survey, but not. They're just saying, here's your corner, 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 but there's nothing to show that person where that corner is. Physically, there's nothing there, no marker.
When you buy a...
So you get the dispute of the two tenants that are
those
saying, well, this is my corner.
Those disputes shouldn't come to us. They should go to the park owner, right?
Should go to the park owner.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't hear those. But anyway, is it... Okay, so that's one thing I'm thinking is if we could waive the survey when it is determined that we have acceptable, a park has an acceptable survey and the corners can be determined. Is that something that seems reasonable?
Does seem reasonable.
Does anybody, Mr. Attorney, does that sound like, is there something we could write in an ordinance that would say something like that? That would be one area of relief. I'm looking where we can look for relief. I don't want to, I mean, if somebody does need a variance, they should have to probably go for a variance. Now, this new ordinance, we're saying if they want to replace something that would have needed a variance, we're going to let them replace that, right, in the same location. If they've already had.
Under those certain, there's three or four criteria in the ordinance that tell you how you have to be.
Okay, so this ordinance already has some relief in it, correct? Okay.
Does.
It doesn't have anything about waiving any surveys.
The commission was in support of that ordinance. The council seemed undetermined at the time. That's why you created an ad hoc committee meeting. Or credit.
Did the committee ever meet or anything?
The committee met a couple times, as Dave said earlier, but we didn't come to any resolution.
Okay. No. Okay, you can move on. If anybody has any other thoughts, they could.
So, let me just add one thing. You made reference to the variance. There's a fee for variance for a purpose of covering the cost of the advertising. So whether it's a variance for an accessory structure or whether it's a variance for something else, still the same cost of advertising and all the fees. So
if somebody has to have a variance, they should pay for the cost because, like everybody else does, I mean I'm not trying to waive the fee for
a variance and a special exception or a variance and a special exception, no matter what they're for. Are required by code, so that fee shouldn't be reduced.
Which you've included in our package.
But a survey is not required by code. At this, we don't have a survey is not required.
If you're creating a new project or a conditional use for a park, survey is required.
Okay. But currently, right now in our code, in an existing park, to put a shed, a survey is not required. It's done by...
If it's a non, you're looking at apples and oranges. You got a park that's non-conforming. We don't necessarily have a survey, or we may not have a survey with monumentation. And then there's conditional use parks that are supposed to have surveys, and they're supposed to be monumented. Some of those monuments are not in place.
Right.
That has been verified. We need to get plot shots for the corner.
Okay.
But the inspectors can't verify setbacks by corners.
Okay, we hear about all these parks that are supposed to have monuments, and they don't. Do we have any... Do we have the ability ever to have one of his people go in there and say, look, there's no monuments here. You're supposed to have monuments. You have 60 days to get these things staked out.
I don't believe so at the current time. You're asking, is there something we have can the ability do to force it? I don't believe so.
Okay. I mean, that would be a way to start bringing these guys into, because we're just sitting back, it seems, and the ones that aren't doing anything.
Can we have green ordinance and pass something that would do that?
That would be retroactive to all. I mean, I have to have a survey on my, on my piece of property whenever I do something.
I would want to look at that,
right,
and research that. Mm-hmm.
All right. Would you make a note then that's something maybe because I don't think we're taking any action today. We're trying to feel this thing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and any time that you have a survey, if you're doing something on your own property, normally that's a bank requirement,
yeah,
as opposed to a zoning requirement.
But I just think the burden of the survey should be on the property owner more so than the person who's paying them rent and paying them, passing everything through to them. And then they want to put a shed because everybody else has a shed, and then they got to go spend, by the time they get done with $400 to $800 on a survey and $400 for thing, you got a $2,000 to $3,000 shed, then you got another $1,000 on top of that. And, anyway, you're talking about a fairly expensive shed just to put a lawnmower or something like that.
And one of the other issues that you brought up in Mr. Lang was whether or not if a park was surveyed and what did have monuments, that maybe you could waive the survey. Then there has to be an ability of Mr. Lang's people, if they go out there and can't find it, mm-hmm, because they've been taken up.
And we have to ask for it.
Pardon?
And we have to ask for it if,
yes,
they have to show up where the monuments are.
Right. It should be the burden of the property owner.
Right.
There to do
needs
that
to be some ability.
Right. I don't think the if this is all supposed to be surveyed out and all these monuments are supposed to be there, and then we go in there, we can't find them, and they go, well, make this guy in the lessee go do the survey on something that should have been provided by the,
mm-hmm,
lessor. Is that the right,
mm-hmm,
lessee and lessor?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real estate
man. And when you do buy a home in a manufactured home park, you don't get a survey, a location survey? That's never required?
Has been required. You get in a situation where you can't verify the property corners, you have to ask for a survey.
Mm-hmm. What if you buy a home and you it's got a shed and it's never had a permit? How would you know that?
Well, you don't. A lot of it's based on complaint. A lot of it's just based on the computer tells us pretty much what's on the property, but in a park, mm-hmm, it'll just say that what improvements are there for the manufactured home typically.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't give us a whole lot of information as far as additions. We have to go to the assessment records and pull,
mm-hmm,
those records.
Mm-hmm. So then it becomes our burden to try to find out about that. What about the park owner? I just wonder who's responsible.
Well, there probably should be more responsibility on the park owners,
mm-hmm,
in some instances.
I think a lot of the responsibility is shifted to the tenant.
Well, if someone's in violation in a park, we go to the tenant because they created a violation.
Right.
Now, in the parks that we've been working on more recently, and I'll use Sierra and Bay City as a prime example, is that we require approval from the park owner before,
mm-hmm,
they are allowed to get make any improvements.
Mm-hmm.
That way, the park owner is also... If he's authorized and then we have a problem, then they've authorized something that may be wrong.
Well, theoretically, they have had the park surveyed, and they could give you a copy of that lot's survey.
In Sierra, we have a survey, or a resurvey, I should call it, and then we have an aerial-based survey also that just shows the improvements. When you put them all on the same drawing, it gets a little bit too much on the drawing sometimes, so it gets confusing. On Bay City, we have basically the same information. We have a survey of the lots resurvey, and then we have a separate drawing showing what improvements are on that lot. Mm-hmm. That helps a lot because you can see what improvements are. They go out in the field, they've got it all in front of them. But you need the markers is the biggest issue, I think, probably.
Mr. President?
Yes,
Mr. Could I ask Mr. Lank one question?
Uh-huh, please, Mr. Moore.
Mr. Lank, is just the setbacks the only issue you need to survey, or do you need it also to determine the coverage, the total coverage of the lot?
Well, when we require the survey, especially when they have to go for a variance, we have to consider the 35% lot coverage. Mm-hmm. So you need the lot to get the square footage, then you need the improvements all calculated to get the square footage again, and then the setbacks are an issue. But well, the setbacks are from all your improvements to the neighboring improvements, could be on three sides, typically not four because of the street somewhere. And then you have the issue of that 35% lot coverage.
Okay, so it's not just the setbacks.
No. Okay. There's setbacks, and which is spacing, I'm calling spacing, or there's spacing, separation distance, which is still a setback.
Yeah, they need a variance to do a home that's larger than, right. You know, that exceeds the whatever.
The ordinance right now is 35%.
35%, okay. If, I mean, obviously anybody that exceeds 35% and they get the variance, it's obvious they're going to be, you know, over the in the setback area or whatever. There's no way we still can't, without having a site survey, because they can be expensive, siting all that stuff, still with a tape measure, mm-hmm. you measure, you know, the square footage of a building. It takes a couple minutes. I see these guys with those
and how good to take however the tape measure is sometimes.
Huh?
It depends on how good the guy is with the tape measure.
Do we have to send our guys out for any training on that?
No, I'm just saying, we've seen different calculations by different people, so.
Well, I know.
Could be an issue.
Could be.
Mr. President?
We have, yes, okay. Mr. Baker.
I know Mr. Lank has shown me a few examples and where you have odd-shaped lots, and then you have buildings that are sometimes odd-shaped, and trying to determine that 35% can be, in certain circumstances,
can be
a little complicated.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. Get an octagon gazebo or something like that, calculating that square footage.
I don't think this ordinance doesn't necessarily speak to the 35%. You're just referencing that.
I'm just referencing that because it seems like the conversation got a little general.
I wonder, since the public record's still open, I'd like to find out, maybe Mr. Class, a park owner, could you come up possibly?
Can I ask one more question, Mr. President?
Yes, while Mr. Class is coming.
Is there any such thing as administrative variance? So, and is there a way to decide on a particular variance without having to go to the Board of Adjustment?
There's not in Sussex at current, there's I'm not sure about Kent, but I know Newcastle has an administrative variance
mm-hmm.
in their code that allows for a less than 1 foot encroachment into mm-hmm. a setback, basically. Mm-hmm.
So there could be a half step.
But it would require to be put into the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed that years ago, and yeah, I'll put this professionally here. There was a little bit of concern about some developers would take advantage of that 1 foot, and everything that they would bring in would be 9 instead of 10. Use that for example. So we had a little concern, and we didn't adopt that ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a concern.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to simplify it.
Yeah, I understand, and that works in a lot of cases. And it would be, I wouldn't have a real problem with that, other than I would. If somebody got repetitive about doing it, then we would have to say, no, you can't. We're not going to approve them anymore because mm-hmm. they're doing it on purpose. They're mm-hmm. not doing it because it was non-intentional. So.
Don't go far, Mr. Lank. Mr. Class.
Can I ask you
okay. Yes, Mr. Wilson.
How about this park has a building there with a footprint, and it wasn't put there before permits were issued. Or whatever, wasn't required. And they put this thing in. They get rid of the old shed, put the new one in. The neighbor finds out to put a new one in, then complains about this and says not to put the ours too close or what. Is there a right for them to have do they have to come at that point proving that they're okay? I can't.
The way I can answer that is the way I answered it when we discussed this ordinance originally was how can you give a permit to replace something that never had a permit.
But if something's been there 20 years, it seems to me
But if it never
discourage anybody to put a new building up and let the old one look more junky.
I know, I don't disagree, but you had something that was placed without a permit. It was never legally placed there. How do you give them a permit to replace it?
Well, we assume that they're, well, how are we going to improve these buildings in if we're not going to do that?
I don't disagree. I understand where you're coming from.
So why don't we do that?
So, I mean, they could if they bring it into conformity and meet the requirements.
But can this council vote to do that? So I think it should be done.
They do that through the variance process.
Then they meet the setback requirements or get a variance.
Well, how about if the building's already there? It's already there. It's been there for 20 years.
But you said it was removed and replaced.
Raggy looking. This guy, and they want to improve this park, and they want to put a new building in. Why are we having such a hard time for people to put this new building in? I mean, why are we going back surveying, and we got variance, we got all these courts, we got all these lawyers involved. Why are we doing this? When for 20 years they put up with this. And somebody's got ticked off of their neighbor, and they turn them in. So I don't want no new building there. I don't want all this. This is my chance to get even. I don't think this. I think we're wrong in doing this.
If it was there, and it wasn't never had a permit, how can you give them a replacement permit? I'll give you the same answer.
Aren't we right?
Still wrong.
If the building was 8x10, and they put back 8x10, right in the same footprint, to me the only thing the county has gained, and that neighborhood has gained. Is gained a better looking building, and all rights should be happy.
I agree.
So you're saying,
forget the violation that never met the requirements.
But it would have to have the park owner's approval.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, because I'm just sitting here thinking, if the park owner approves of the placement of a shed, then I'm wondering why we're having a public hearing.
So why do we have setbacks?
Huh?
Why do we create setbacks then?
Basically, we're talking about deregulating the parks
and
putting the burden on the park owners. Mr. Class, step up, please.
Here we go.
Is that a good idea?
Hi, Steve Class, Georgetown, Delaware. I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Well, I guess the first thing was, is it too much to ask the park owners to monument the corners and provide the county with a survey of individual?
Well, it depends what you call monument. All our communities are identified with either iron stakes or concrete monuments.
So if one of his guys goes out there, he can easily find those?
No.
No, okay.
He'd need a metal detector.
Yeah, because after a while, you got to remember, some of these communities have been existing for 35 years. You cut grass, it creates topsoil, you know, so, and then people pound down a little bit because nobody wants their lawnmower blades damaged. And we can identify if we know ahead of time. Our brother Mark's here. We have a metal detector, and we locate them. In some of our older communities, what we also do is once we have to relocate either for a homeowner or the county or anyone else, we actually will dig some topsoil around it and actually encase that in concrete and being flush with the ground. So it's a little easier for everybody in the future.
Okay, if the park owner, yourself.
Yes, sir.
So one of your tenants wants a shed. And you say it's okay. You go out and look where they want to put it and all that stuff.
Say it's been there 10 years.
Well, no. There's no. Just say once a shed, brand new shed.
Okay, sure.
And they got neighbors, you know, front, back, all the way around. Because you own all the land around it, and you've approved everything that goes in, supposedly, hopefully, you approve everything that's placed in your park.
Hopefully, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Usually we have public hearings when, you know, for our rezonings and stuff, because we have everybody's are different property owners, right?
Correct.
So we feel it is imperative that neighboring property owners have a say, because they're actually property owners. Now, should tenants have a say on you placing an approved shed that meets our county ordinance?
I see no reason why they
then
should not.
I'm saying maybe we don't need these public hearings, and maybe we don't need some of these things, but we maybe have some kind of, like she said, some kind of administrative way of dealing with this, where you maybe pay a flat fee, because we want to be able to track this so we know where everything is. Mm-hmm. You submit back to us maybe some kind of a sign off
yeah,
or something.
Sure.
It's been placed properly.
Well, I don't want neighbor A to have a problem with neighbor B. Because
that'd be your problem, not our problem.
Well, I understand.
Maybe
but
you should
call
have
you,
the public.
They're
maybe
call
you should then advertise and have a public hearing within your community.
Then I wouldn't allow anything. You know, I mean, there's only so much I am willing to do. But the thing is that I would agree that each neighbor should sign off that they don't have a problem. I mean, we're having
That'd be a policy within your park. But I'm just saying, why should we, if it's all within your property, go to the expense of a public hearing when you are the property owner? It's typically we have the public hearings when there's multiple property owners because we need their input. Now that you own a property, they've all been, you know, negotiated and signed contracts with you, everybody in this park, and you have certain rules. And the county could then have some basic setback requirements and things like that. Now, if they exceed the 35% rule, and if they and they want to go encroach into a setback, maybe we would have an additional fee. In other words, there's a flat fee just to place your shed, and then if there was setback issues because of the way we have some basic county rules, then we would have maybe additional fees because of, for whatever reason. I'm just thinking.
I still think you need
to
set.
And we can get away from the variance and coming in
front
of
them. Yeah, but you need to set some kind of minimum standard somewhere along the line.
Well, I'm saying, some of these older parks have a problem maybe somebody coming in and having now these new modern homes which are larger.
Yes, sir.
And all of a sudden it eats up more space. Then you don't have space, but they need a shed. They like a shed. Neighbors all have sheds. And you have no problem with a shed.
No.
But it's in the setback area, which is the fire marshal and other people deem to be reasonable. Setbacks, I think our setbacks are reasonable between units. And if you want to violate that setback, there should be some kind of maybe a application you have to file or something. But there should be a placement fee anyway. But I mean, is there an administrative way we could do this? Because I don't know why I just was sitting here thinking, why are we having a public hearing when he owns, not you, but I'm just saying, when one entity owns everything, and these people are in their park on their land, and theoretically have had approval to do everything they do. Maybe I think variances and public hearing are should be different property owners.
Landlords are responsible for what goes on their property.
Yeah, so is there a way we can maybe, I hate to say it, scrap it all?
It's not quite as simple, Councilwoman Dover, Deaver, as you expect, because by statute, we're not actually allowed to enter on the property unless we get permission.
Well, I think any tenants. I mean, even an apartment I rent, I can't do that, too.
Well, I mean, even on the ground, not in their home. I mean, enter on the ground.
Because they rent the ground from you, right?
Yeah, we have some issues able to conform on both your requirements, the state requirements, public health.
And you
so
don't
we're,
want
we're
that
trying,
violated.
Always working this out. You know, I would advise, I had worked with Vince Robertson and Mike Izzo and Tom Baker and some others on the recent Sussex County roads agreement. You know, it may be advisable, you know, consider that I could get a group together and we could go over all this stuff and consider helping you out.
I think there was an attempt to put an ad hoc committee together, but that was primarily tenants, I suppose. It would be appropriate, I think, if park owners were invited. And
Ms. Sisk, we discussed that prior to council meeting. She'd be willing to serve, and I talked to Robert Tunnell, and he would be willing to serve if we could borrow perhaps Mr. Lank or Mr. Abbott or someone, their employees, as well as Mr. Robertson. I think we could come up with some ideas that take the burden off of you all in this.
Well, I think we have a responsibility, I think, as a county to supposedly know where everything is, whether it's placed on private property or in these parks and everything. So we have that responsibility.
Absolutely.
And for us to do the paperwork and chase it all around, there should be a fee associated with it. And so I could see us doing all that, but I'm sitting here just thinking about all this. Why are we doing a public hearing? Because the tenants are already they're your tenants. They're on your land. And you've approved all that stuff. And I think it should be ironed out that if somebody comes to get the permit or whatever we come up with, right, and it's already been ironed out on your part that you've already agreed that they can place the shed. Then they just come in. It's a formality. They pay a permit or a placement fee or whatever. Out they go. And a building permit, maybe in a placement fee. I don't know how it works, you know, but however we come up. But then you don't have to but you're going to sign off saying that it's where it is.
I agree. I think it's common sense to work with the neighbors, with the residents. The county could gain some revenue because anything that they would need to reinspect, because you do have employees
Well, we would follow up with an inspector to see that if we had this document from you, that it would jive when one of Lawrence's men went out.
I can't speak for any other community owner.
No, I'm just saying.
Okay.
That, but you,
trust me.
But I'm saying that's the way it ought to work. I don't know why county government's going in and doing so much on your property to find out what's going on.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you.
Has that just started?
Good. What's that?
The county going on the property and see what's going on?
Is that just started? We've, well, you know.
How long have you been on county, George?
Well, it's been popping up like for years. I mean, I don't know how much Lawrence. How long has this been a problem?
Too long.
Yeah, we just haven't come up with any. You know, it just doesn't get resolved.
It doesn't get less.
So I don't know, Mike. I mean, it takes three of us to get it resolved.
That's great.
Before
that's
we
a
had,
fact.
Huh?
That's a fact.
Right, and you can make noise over these issues all you want every couple of years, and then it just dies again until. But we got some new faces here, and maybe we can breathe some new blood into this whole issue.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's a consensus not to take action on the ordinance today, but rather allow for an ad hoc committee to be created. I will probably ask the council if you have names that you'd like on this committee to share them with our county administrator. We'll try to keep it to 10 folks or less. And
doesn't DeMoa have a president that could serve on this?
It would certainly make sense that they would serve.
Spiro would be a good.
We're not good. It's a public. It'll be open to the public as far as their attendance. But as far as participation, I would hope that ad hoc committee would appoint a chairman that could kind of keep some kind of order. We've done this, as you said, for the road standards. We did it for moderate place housing programs. So there is a precedent. And if you have the success they have, maybe we can come back with something that the council could agree on.
Be happy to serve.
If there's going to be a committee, I think we should appoint it. And we appoint a chairperson.
Ultimately, Mr. Baker will provide us with the names at a council meeting in the future, and we will at that time discuss those names offered, and it would require a majority
vote.
Mike,
I don't know if we need to. I mean, some of these boards get real big, get not much done, but I don't know if we need to each put some person on there. I think somebody from owners, somebody from who represents tenants.
Well, I wasn't saying, and then somebody who I was simply saying was if it's going to be a committee.
Right.
She'll be appointed by this council.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'll
check
my name by this council.
Right.
Not a
but I don't, I'm trying to get away from a bunch of, you know, people. I just think we need some people have official recognition of some kind, in some kind of capacity. And there's a number of organizations. I'm sure Dave and the staff and Lawrence can provide us with these organizations. And they can bring somebody to the table. And then people that have some input can always go to their people to help get the input into the committee or something like that, and it's open to the it'll be open to the public and stuff like that.
So we'll ask Mr. Baker with in consultation with council to bring forth some names of a potential committee within maybe 2 weeks from now or so.
And then yes.
And that committee should meet no more than three times.
And get right
to
the meeting. That's
right.
You
can't get it done in three meetings.
Three strikes, you're out.
Gone.
I want to say
four.
Like one of those dogs we were talking about.
Yeah, but in our code, we're allowed four strikes to our residents in our home.
Four?
Yeah, it's getting a little extra.
I've been to meetings at his park, and the parks are beautiful, and he's got a close relationship with the tenants.
He's well loved.
You're willing to pay me for the lease? No, I would give it gratis. We just like to get this resolved. You all have enough on your plate.
Yes, we do.
We have financial issues.
Representative, I think.
Okay. Let us work on this.
We will go ahead and conclude number two on Mr. Baker's agenda.
Thank you.
By deferring that until the ad hoc committee comes back with some recommendations.
And start with the basis. I mean, we did have some options in here and stuff, and they can use a lot of this stuff.
I would ask that the park owners don't go far as well as the residents of those parks, because the next item is the discussion of manufactured housing land use.